All right, welcome to the... Today's You podcast. I'm your host, Colin Sylvester, also here with Pat Whitehurst, a radio and podcast extraordinaire here at FanRag Sports.
Thank you for the words.
So we're going to go ahead and dive into March Madness, the best time of the year in college basketball, and bring our caller on. Bobby, you there?
Hey, Colin.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. How you guys doing?
Doing well, thank you.
So you'll have to go at it with Pat Whitehurst here. Bev doing some traveling for the games tomorrow. But let's go ahead and kick things off with the game last night between those two 11 seeds. It was a wild game. I said at halftime as I was watching it here with another FanRag buddy, it's all BYU. No way Ole Miss comes back. Sure enough, Ole Miss comes back from 17 down at the half. I mean, it was a crazy game. It's tough to watch it and see, you know, are they going to use that to make a run? Bobby, do you think this Ole Miss team, are they capable of a run to the Sweet 16 or beyond, or is this a one great half and they really aren't going to do as much after this?
Yeah, I don't think they beat Xavier. Xavier matches up really well against Ole Miss. Stephen Moody, who is Ole Miss's, I don't know if he's their best player, but at least their best scorer. Who's a shorter guard. Well, D. Davis is kind of the same type of body as him for Xavier, so, you know, he'll match up pretty well against him. And then Xavier's strength is the interior, where Ole Miss can struggle. Ole Miss' strength is on the perimeter. So I think Xavier's going to end up beating Ole Miss. I think it'll be a close game. But, yeah, I think it was one great half. They'll play well in the next game, but I don't see them beating Xavier.
Yeah, I mean, I really was pretty high on BYU. I thought if they were able to win that game, that was a team that could go on a run and take down Xavier. Pat, I know you're doing plenty of brackets as well and pools. Do you have either from that matchup that's going to be upcoming, Xavier or Ole Miss, advancing past their seed, even if it's Xavier past three seed? Or is it really a one-and-done for both now?
I think it's going to be a one-and-done for both. I really like these play-in games, though, because I think it gets – you not only have these teams now getting NCAA tournament victories. You know, you take a look at, you know, Hampton now has a tournament victory on the resume. And say what you want about it being a play-in game or a first four game, they still get the win, and that's there. I don't see either one of these teams really doing a whole lot. I do have Xavier. Winning this game. Then I think I'm going to have Baylor against Georgia State. I'm picking Baylor, of course. I think Baylor is going to be too physical. They rebound. They play defense well. And you know, Xavier, they didn't overly impress me, I'd say, in the Big East. And I'm still used to them being a Big East team. That's just not the Big East that I remember. And, you know, maybe I think when we look at the tournament as well, as much as I like Villanova, I think they're a solid team. They still didn't go through the rigors of the what we're used to seeing with the Big East tournament.
Right, right.
Yeah, well, I mean, they are one of three teams in the country with 11 top 50 wins. So,
yeah,
I think you're downplaying it a little bit. I mean, you look at conference RPI, Big East graded out pretty high. Yeah, it's not the Big East of yesteryear, but it's still a pretty good conference. I think that's a little downplaying it, but yeah, I think it's not what it was, but it's better than what people think.
Do you think Xavier matches up with Baylor? If Baylor
Baylor. I love Baylor. I think Xavier can give Baylor trouble on the inside. But I think Baylor wins. I mean, I'm not taking Xavier by any means. But I think, you know, when you said Villanova didn't go through the rigors, I mean, Villanova had a tough schedule when you look at it.
Yeah, you actually talked, Bobby, about Baylor as being one of the teams who could potentially win over Kentucky. Now, they didn't really get them in their part of the bracket in the West, and Kentucky's in the Midwest. Looking now that we have the bracket, we've talked all season about Kentucky, who can beat them and such. Is there anybody in the Midwest who you think could give Kentucky problems from a matchup standpoint? The three teams you listed in that article, this is a couple weeks ago now on Today's View, it was Arizona, Baylor, and Wisconsin, I believe. None of those teams appear in the Midwest. Is there anybody in that region who can give Kentucky problems?
No. It's a pretty favorable draw for Kentucky. I mean, when you look at the two seed they drew, it's probably the second worst two seed, with Virginia being the worst. And it's, again, a favorable draw for Kentucky on that side. Their three is Notre Dame, who has no size. Kentucky has the complete opposite of that with a ton of size. And their size can also defend guards like Pat Connaughton and Jerry and Grant. And then, you know, their four is Maryland, who, yeah, it probably should have been a three seed or at least the number one four seed. But they're driven by what Des Wells can do. What Des Wells does is get to the rim, kind of use that his size to post up other guards. Well, who's he going to post up? I mean, Trey Lyles, who has 4 or 5 inches on him. So I think it's a favorable draw. The one of the interesting games is if Purdue beats Cincinnati, Kentucky, if they beat Hampton, Purdue has the size that could give Kentucky a little bit of a struggle. I think you'll kind of see kind of what Wisconsin and Purdue did, where Purdue was up on Wisconsin early in the first half, hung around, and then Wisconsin pulled away. That wouldn't shock me if that happened against Kentucky as well.
Yeah, maybe more than losing or really being threatened, you might see a Kentucky team that isn't all that focused in the first couple rounds. And I've said all season long, I mean, I don't know if I have the guts to pick against Kentucky early in the tournament or at all in the tournament, if we're being honest. But the teams that Kentucky has struggled with during the regular season were kind of those just outside the top 25, but still good teams, but they didn't scare Kentucky. Pat, do you think we're going to see in these opening rounds a focused team that knows what they're playing for, or because maybe they're not playing these top seeds, maybe they'll be a little lackluster?
I have to agree with Bobby that I think Purdue will present some problems if they're able to get by Cincinnati. Those 8-9 games are always so, such a toss-up. I mean, that's the definition of that game, but those are always some of the best first-round games, I think. I think you're going to see a focused Kentucky team. I think they know what's in front of them. I believe, you know, Coach Cal as well, like it's easy to say, you look at that team and say, well, they get the greatest players every year coming in, and, you know, anyone can win with that team. Not anyone can win with that team. Most people probably
Rick Barnes can.
But not to the extent that Coach Cal has done with Kentucky. And I think they're going to be focused. I think they're going to be ready to play. I think they're going to roll through the first two games. And then, you know, I could see Maryland giving them a little bit of a hiccup, but then I think they're going to elevate the game as well. And, I think the bottom part of that bracket is going to be where the real fireworks take place.
Yeah.
I'm not a KU fan by any means, and I think really they haven't played well since about Valentine's Day.
Whew. That's wild, definitely. Yeah, I think you could see, you know, some pretty easy games, especially early there. Like you said, there could definitely be some interesting matchups on the bottom half of that bracket. I could see Texas winning a few. I mean, Texas is such an enigma. You know, you could, with all the talent they have, you want to send them to the Sweet 16 and maybe further, but they just haven't really shown the ability to string wins together this year. So let's open it up to the rest of the bracket. There are a lot of teams outside of Kentucky. The second round starts tomorrow, which is one of the best days in college sports, if not the best day. Bobby, looking at the whole opening round, which are the games that you think are the most likely upsets that could really bring some of the madness at the beginning here?
The one that I will, you know, if I was living out west and in a certain city, to go to the window and place a bet, Eastern Washington over Georgetown.
Nice.
The game's in Portland. Georgetown hasn't made it out of the first weekend since about 1972. Eastern Washington has Tyler Harvey, who's the nation's leading scorer. Georgetown hasn't looked good recently. That's the biggest upset I see, or the upset I'd pick right away. Other upsets, you know, you kind of go to the 12-5 games. I actually like Wyoming to beat Northern Iowa, and I like Buffalo to beat West Virginia in the 12-5.
Yeah.
And then I don't want to call it an upset because it's Texas, but I like their matchup against Butler just because of the size that Texas presents. And if they play well. So, but yeah, it's really, you know, if you want to talk a true upset, Eastern Washington over Georgetown.
I could definitely see that one happening. This year, I actually kind of surprised myself. Don't have any upsets beyond the 12 seeds. I as well have Wyoming. I do have Texas as well. I haven't gone as bold as the Georgetown Eastern Washington one, but Georgetown struggles, you know, so often in the tournament.
And it's essentially a home game for Eastern Washington. They're playing 4 hours from home.
And he can light it up. Who's their guard? He can light it up.
Tyler Harvey.
Yeah.
Harvey. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I could definitely see that one happening. Pat, you have any other upset picks? I'm looking at your bracket now, and you have some.
I'm looking
some
at
pretty
the
interesting West.
In the West, I'm kind of going with a little chaos theory here in the West. I think one of the great early round games is going to be Harvard against North Carolina. I love the aspect that Tommy Amaker from Duke and going up against the heels. I always pick against the heels. That's just the way I do it. And I'm going to take Harvard. I'm going to take Harvard playing Wofford in the next round because I think you're going to match up as well with Arkansas. I'm highly anticipated and a very rarely seen 13-12 game in the round to get into the Sweet 16. So I like Harvard there. I think they play disciplined ball, and I think we're going to see UNC maybe trip up a little bit.
Yeah, it always seems like every year there's that one region where two upsets happen to where it's like you have a 12 and a 13 playing for the Sweet 16, and those are always my favorite games to watch because you know one way or another there's going to be a Cinderella team
so
no matter what
happens. There.
Right. And you have two mid-majors trying to move on to the next weekend. So I definitely hope we get to see one of those type of games. Bobby, you laid out a couple upsets. Do you have one team in particular that you think will be this year's Cinderella? Whether that's a much higher seed, like a 12 or 13 seed going to the Sweet 16, or even I guess there's another type of Cinderella you could say where it's maybe a 5 seed or higher that goes all the way to the Final Four. Any of those in your bracket?
No. I mean, I have Michigan State making the Sweet 16. That's really it. I think you'll see kind of chalk play out after the first round. Whatever, I refuse to call it the second round. It's the first round.
Me too. Thank you.
I think it's going to play chalk after that outside of Michigan State beating Virginia. I don't have a 5 seed in my Final Four. I know we'll get to it later, but yeah, my highest seed is a 3. So I think you'll see the upsets in the first round and, you know, some 11 seeds, some 12 seeds, a 13 seed, but then I think you'll see chalk from there on out.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of people this year, more than I've seen in past years, are doing chalky brackets, if you will. I filled out one for the first time and said, this is really boring. It's not like I wanted to have chaos everywhere, but it seems like parity is alive and well in college basketball, but
well,
when
we
comes down
about
this year,
Colin, there's Kentucky, then there's six other good teams, and then there's about seven decent teams, and everyone else just kind of there. It's such a top-heavy year. It's just a small number that the parity is, you know, kind of from teams 17 beyond, that it's kind of okay. From there, it'll be interesting. But I think there's a clear top 15, 16 teams in the country.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it was a year where we don't see a whole lot of Cinderellas. Pat, do you have anybody who can sort of break that mold? because even if there are 16, you know, top teams in the nation this year, what happens in March is one team gets hot, and even if they're not one of the best teams, they go on a run. So is there anybody, I guess, who's the most dangerous to get hot, if you will?
I think there's, you know, once again, if chaos is going to come in the West or a team that gets hot, you look at some star players and what they can do. D'Angelo Russell's absolutely phenomenal. And I think Ohio State, if they can get by VCU, it's going to be a tough game as well. They're going to give Arizona all sorts of problems. And if they beat Arizona, I don't have them pinned to beat Arizona, but I think that's going to be one of the best second round. And I'm going to feed into us. We're just going to start calling it the second round. You don't start in the second round. You start in the first round. And Ohio State, Arizona, for a chance to go to the Sweet 16, I think that's going to be a great matchup. I'm really looking forward to that. You know, was it Seth Greenberg was on Phoenix, and he's going to be a 10-time NBA All-Star. High praise. I mean, I don't necessarily know he's going to be a 10-time NBA All-Star, but he is a superstar. And we've seen them in the past, like Carmelo Anthony, these players take over a tournament. I would not be surprised to see. I'm not going to pick it because I hate Ohio State.
Yeah,
I wouldn't
be surprised
to see Ohio State not
talent around those guys.
There was talent around Carmelo?
Who's D'Angelo Russell playing around? I mean, that Ohio State team sucks. I mean, Amir Williams is like might be the worst player in college basketball, and he starts. I don't think they beat VCU. I don't know how they're gonna if the ball's not in D'Angelo Russell's hand, they're not gonna get the ball over half court against VCU.
Well, I mean, to play the other side of it here, you, Bobby, just recently had an article on Today's U that talked about sort of the all American teams, if you will, of each region, and you've been really on D'Angelo Russell all season long.
He's great. He's great. But the rest of the team's terrible. And if it's a good defensive team like VCU, if they can find a way to contain Russell, there's not a chance, there's not anybody on Ohio State that can beat VCU. That's what's going to be interesting to watch. A great defensive team like VCU try to contain Russell and make other people beat him. And if someone like Sam Thompson can step up or Mark Loving can step up and win the game for Ohio State, because that's what's going to end up being.
Yeah, it's almost a shame to see VCU. I mean, they're playing great. They win the A-10 tournament. If that team had Briante Weber, I think it takes them from a 7 seed that is a Sweet 16 threat to another 7 or maybe even 6 seed if they had had him threat to go even deeper, the Elite Eight, maybe even the Final Four. I was really high on that team, but it's tough to pick them when they're missing such a key part there. I'm a little surprised.
Especially out in the West, too.
Right. I'm a little surprised nobody took Davidson, especially with our President Barack Obama picking the Wildcats to beat Gonzaga and go to the Sweet 16.
Either, well, Steph Curry doesn't play there anymore.
Right.
You know, he's moved on to bigger and better things.
But they're still a very dangerous team. I mean, they finished second in both the regular season and the Atlantic 10 tournament, which is no small task. That conference seems like getting deeper by the year. So I could see, I don't have it in my bracket, but it is one of those picks where you could definitely see Davidson going on.
They won the Atlantic 10 Conference, and then they finished third in the tournament.
They won the regular season. Yeah, sorry, I was thinking Dayton. Dayton finished second
in
both. So yeah, I could see them making some noise as well. So what everybody's been waiting for, we'll get to some Today's U Final Four picks. Bobby, who do you have in Indianapolis this year?
All right, well, this is going to shock everyone that I have Kentucky.
What?
Yeah, I know. I have Kentucky, Arizona, Iowa State, and Oklahoma.
Yeah, there's a lot of people high on Iowa State. I've seen multiple brackets with
I kind of hate that. On Sunday, I immediately had them in there, and then everyone's saying that they're high on Iowa State, too.
Everybody's just copying you.
I know.
They know your stuff. But why Iowa State? Why are so many people high on this team that clearly they have an awesome offense, but they do seem a little bit one-sided to me?
Well, they're getting better defensively, and that's because of Jameel McKay's transfer in. He provides a threat at the rim. He's a tough player. One of the knocks about Iowa State was that they were just soft. You know, they were the finesse team. Well, McKay is not afraid to ugly the game up, which is what every team kind of needs, is that one guy. So they're getting a little bit better defensively. And then offensively, they have one of the best point guards in the country, Monte Morris. You know, he just doesn't turn the ball over. He, you know, his assist-to-turnover ratio is like 4.5 to 1, and he can score 20 points when he needs to. And then they have just the matchup nightmares and Gorgeous Niang and Bryce DeJean-Jones is a taller guard. Dustin Hogue's a tough matchup. So I think they can score with anyone, and I think the bracket works out well in their favor. I think, you know, them against Gonzaga is going to be – it might be the best game of the NCAA tournament if it happens. I think those two will be a ton of fun to watch. There'll be a ton of points scored. And then, you know, same thing. With Duke as their number one, if Duke plays the seed, Iowa State's in the Elite Eight, Duke doesn't play any defense, and I like Iowa State's offense better than Duke's offense.
Yeah, outside of Jahlil Okafor, I think from an offensive standpoint, they are a good bit better than Duke, actually. So I could see that being a great game. Pat, you asked me a couple days ago what my Final Four was, so now it's time for me.
Yeah, let's hear it.
On the podcast.
He didn't want to do it, Bobby, on the radio show at CZYR, FanRig Sports, like minutes after the Final Four. I mean, here I thought, you know, he'd have like 10 brackets filled out, ready to roll.
Yeah, who you got in your Final Four?
Oh, I thought we were talking about you.
Oh, me? Mine has changed since the 30 seconds after the brackets were released.
Okay, well let's hear yours a little bit.
All right, we'll
and then I'll unveil mine.
Okay. I as well have Kentucky in there. I mean, it, like Bobby said, I think they have a really, really good draw there. I also have Arizona in the Final Four, and Arizona is a team that could definitely give them some trouble in the Final Four. I also, my surprise pick really for the whole bracket is Louisville in the Final Four as well. Now, I know they're without Chris Jones, but I really think that's a team that'll get some great production. I'm going out on a limb here, but you need to do that if you're going to win your pool. I think Wayne Blackshear is really due to finally finally come into his own and be what they've hoped he would be in Louisville for a while now.
Louisville fans have been saying that for 4 years.
Yep, I understand. I think it finally happens now, and they find a way to get to the Final Four. And then I think you have Duke as well, and you get an all-ACC Final Four on one side versus Kentucky and Arizona. I think it's an all-blue final, Kentucky beating Duke. So there's what's definitely going
to
happen.
As opposed to an all-bluegrass state final. Right. You know, I also have Louisville in the Final Four. I have not seen Villanova enough, and maybe that plays to why I said the Big East is down. But, you know, I'm a more of a traditionalist, and I like Jay Wright. I like Villanova. I just don't know enough about them, and that's not where I'm going to pick. I think Louisville's going to make it out of there. I'd take a look at this time of year, too, and it's a lot of I place a lot into the coach's experience, and I think Rick Pitino has, you know, a tremendous amount of experience. And I take a look at, you know, the rest of my Final Four picks, of course, Coach K. I'm a Duke guy. I'm going to take Duke to be in the Final Four. I think they're going to have a tough game against Iowa State in the Elite Eight to make it to the Final Four. Of course, Kentucky. I do have Kentucky playing Wichita State. I think Wichita State's going to knock off Indiana pretty easily. And then I'm not necessarily sure it's even an upset over KU, but I'm going to take Wichita State over them and then over Butler to get there using that experience that Wichita State has. But Cinderella's shoes will be off. Clock will strike midnight when they face UK. And out west, I'm all about the Badgers, man. I love Frank the Tank. I love Bo Ryan. I think he's the best basketball coach in America. And Arizona's going to give them a real tough time, but I think Wisconsin cuts the nets down, and then they play Kentucky. And they're going to beat Kentucky, and it's going to be a Duke against Wisco final game on Wisconsin.
Wow. So Bobby, you actually had, I mentioned that article, you said Wisconsin was one of the teams that has a chance, at least matchups-wise, to beat Kentucky. Is that to you, if it were to happen in the Final Four, is that a toss-up game? Is it a 70% chance win for Kentucky? What are the chances Wisconsin can beat Kentucky if they get there?
Yeah, I would say it's about 70-30 Kentucky. I mean, everyone wants to talk about last year, how it's a one-point game and all that. Well, let's remember, you know, Kentucky didn't have Willie Cauley-Stein, who's a perfect matchup against Frank Kaminsky.
Yeah.
So what Kaminsky does well is the same thing Cauley-Stein does well. So I think that kind of makes it a little different when you're, you know, don't look at last year's game, which was, you know, obviously a fantastic game. It's going to be completely different. Obviously, the two teams are a little bit different, but let's remember that, you know, Cauley-Stein is now there, who is, again, I think the perfect matchup for Kaminsky, or against Kaminsky, I should say. So I would say 70-30, just because, you know, Wisconsin is a good team. But, again, they don't have the depth, especially without Trayvon Jackson. You know, they're only playing 6-7 guys, whereas, you know, let's say Decker and Nigel Hayes getting foul trouble. Well, okay, you know, now Wisconsin's really struggling. Kentucky, you know, if Trey Lyles and Andrew Harrison get in foul trouble, you know, they're still fine.
Right, right.
So
yeah,
I think that's where it's going to show up is in the tournament, where with foul trouble and again, you know, every game for Kentucky is going to be a home game.
Yeah. I hope we get to see a game similar to the Kentucky-Wisconsin game last year, because that was a classic. So
I would prefer if Kentucky's not involved in that.
Yeah. For your own sanity.
Yeah.
So those are your today's U Final Four picks. We'll close out with one of the games tonight, another one of those last four in games. Last night's between BYU and Ole Miss was a great game. Dayton versus Boise State tonight. Pat, who do you think wins that game tonight? And does either one have a chance, kind of like we talked about, to open? Does either one have a chance to win in advance? After that.
It seems like you're opening the door for me to bash the Big East again, playing the fact that they play Providence, but I do have Providence winning against Dayton. I'm picking Dayton to win on their home floor. I think the Flyers are a more I just think they're a safer pick than Boise State, and I'm glad that necessarily most brackets you don't have to actually pick these play-in games,
right?
Because they are complete toss-ups, like the first round is generally. But I'm going to take Dayton, and I'm going to have them lose a close game to Providence. I really wanted, in you know, your Oklahoma talk, Bobby, wanted to pick Albany beating Oklahoma. But I have Oklahoma winning that game, winning against Providence. And then I was very conflicted as well with Oklahoma against Virginia. And I ultimately decided to go with Virginia. But...
yeah, you mentioned Albany. I'm going to be torn watching that. I'm friends with and played high school basketball with one of their assistant coaches who also played there.
Awesome.
So I've been a Great Danes fan for a while now. And, you know, I mean, obviously I'd love to see them win, but my bracket would not. So
right, exactly.
I wish Albany was a 14 seed somewhere else.
So, Bobby, do you have Dayton as well tonight? And,
yeah, actually, and I, as I defended the Big East, I had Dayton beating Providence.
There we go.
Okay. I've been high on Dayton the entire year, as I'm sure Colin knows. You know, I thought they were going to be about a 7 seed or an 8 seed, you know, no worse than a 9, somewhere in that area. And for them to fall to the last team in makes no sense to me. This team is different than most, where they are a small team. They play no one over 6'6", 6'7". They spread you out. They have plenty of experience from last year's run. Scoochie Smith is a phenomenal point guard, and Jordan Seibert is a big-time player, as he showed last year in the tournament. Again, Colin mentioned earlier, they finished second in both the Atlantic 10 regular season, Atlantic 10 conference tournament. Again, they're playing at home, too. Boise State has to travel across the country, so you get that little weird situation going on. I like Dayton to win tonight. I like Dayton to win against Providence. And I like them in a close – or I like Oklahoma, but it's going to be a close game against Dayton.
Yeah, that's definitely a popular upset pick, not just for Dayton to win in the first four game, but also to win one or two more times after that. But definitely hope it's another great game like last night. We'll end on the home court game for Dayton and hoping that they go through, since it sounds like all of us picked Dayton. But thank you, Bobby, for joining us today. And you can read Bobby multiple times a week on Today's U and find him on Twitter at UKLefty22. Thank you, Pat, as well, for helping out with the college basketball side. And hopefully it'll be a lot of March Madness watching in the Today's U and FanRag offices here. Thank you, guys.
My pleasure. On Wisconsin, Bobby, nice talking to you. Good luck, buddy.
You too.
All right, let's move on to some college football here. A lot of people forget about college football during the spring, especially in March with all the March Madness going on. It's actually one of the best times of the year, most intriguing times of the year for college football because of all the spring practices and you have those position battles. So we'll bring on our two callers. We have, let's see here, we have Dustin and Ryan. How's it going, guys?
Good, how you doing?
Doing pretty well. So, Ryan, hey, how's it going? We had a really interesting article by Dustin earlier this week, and it was talking about Northwestern as they go into spring practice this year. Dustin, do you really think that the feeling for the Northwestern program heading into the spring and the next season is that if they don't see progress, that Fitzgerald has sort of plateaued there and they need to go in a different direction? Or is this a matter of it takes time, he needs to get another solid recruiting class in and really get back to the 8 or so win mark in order to keep his job?
Well, I don't necessarily think Pat Fitzgerald's job is in jeopardy. I mean, what he's been able to do ever since taking over for the late Randy Walker has been sensational in a conference that is dominated by teams like Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, and Penn State on a regular basis. I just, yeah, of course.
Come on, Dustin. We've been in that Big Ten championship a number of years.
But you can never forget about Wisconsin as well. I'll appeal to Pat there a little bit. But, you know, this is one of those situations where I don't know that Northwestern can get back to that 8, 9, 10 win mark and do it on a consistent basis. Now, it's not to say that they were ever there, but I think the feeling was 3-4 years ago that this was a team that was going to consistently compete for Rose Bowls, going to compete for Big Ten championships. And I just don't think that's the case anymore. He's had a few good recruiting classes. Can he have a few good years every now and then? Yeah, of course, he's done it in the past. I just don't think it's going to be this type of thing where Northwestern's going to be at the top of the Big Ten radar as this dark horse. I think year in, year out, they'll be between the 4 and 7 win mark. Occasionally they'll have a 2 or 3 win season. Occasionally they may have an 8 or 9 win season. But I think Fitzgerald's job's safe with being the leading the winningest coach in Northwestern's football history and getting 8, 9, and 10 wins there since 2006, I think is enough to solidify his job as long as nothing drastic happens on a downward spiral.
Ryan, you're in the Chicago area and you've covered a good bit of sports and teams there. Do you think the feeling in Chicago is that Northwestern's a program where if they're going to a bowl every year, that's good for them? I know I was at Wake Forest, and the feeling is sort of, you know, if we can get our football team going to bowls every once in a while, we get that 9-win season or something like that, we're great. Is that sort of the feeling of the fan base in Chicago, or is there going to be pressure to at least some of the time consistently win 9 or 10 games there?
Yeah, I mean, I like Northwestern. I like Pat Fitzgerald. I got a Northwestern hat on my head right now, not because I'm the biggest Wildcat fan in the world, because I'm a bit of a new era junkie. But the unfortunate reality for Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern is he just doesn't have the support. He doesn't have the fan support. He doesn't have the support of the administration. It's just a difficult sell to prospective recruits, and there's plenty of talent to come by in the Chicagoland area. But when you think about other traditional academic institutions with powerhouse football programs, your Notre Dames and your Stanfords, they don't get
at Northwestern anywhere near as much leniency from an admission standpoint as other football powerhouses with similarly high academic standards do. I honestly don't even think they necessarily get as much leniency as even Vanderbilt does. And I think in a way you can make a case with the amount of talent and the education that you can sell and being in the heart of Nashville, Vanderbilt's almost an easier sell than Northwestern is. And so without the resources there, and I mean, Northwestern has this massive endowment, but they've proven over the course of the last few decades that they're really not willing to pump too much money back into that program. So when you talk about Northwestern, they try to market themselves as kind of the Big Ten or Chicago's Big Ten team, but you know, they're several miles outside the city, so it's not like you're in the heart of a really, really vibrant area of the Chicago scene there. So it is a much more difficult sell, and unless they have some T. Boone's Pickens type donor that can come in and just pump a ton of money into that program. And granted, there are those type of alumni out there for Northwestern. I really don't think you're going to see much more than what Dustin mentioned there. They're going to be a team that continuously kind of is in that 5 to 7 win region and may occasionally jump up and grab 9 or 10 wins in a good year. And that's, you know, kind of indicative of how good of a job Pat Fitzgerald's doing there, because there have been a whole lot of other coaches come through Evanston, Illinois, that have not been able to accomplish even that much.
I blame their color scheme as a big part of the problem. You take a look across sports, any team that wears purple, it just doesn't really win.
TCU.
TCU begs to differ.
TCU, yeah, but they have some, you know, more, maybe some more black. But I'm thinking like either the Los Angeles Lakers, you know, they're the only real team that wears, you know, and that's not really purple. I mean, I guess that's kind of purple.
I think LSU does okay for themselves.
So it's definitely not the either the financing or the academic standards. Definitely the color.
The color, yeah, exactly. Okay. Maybe, you know, change like the maybe they need a wildcat change or to get the. Get that N to be a little more fierce.
Yeah. Well, if we're staying on the making the case for color determining football prowess, it actually works for orange. You know, you have some pretty good orange teams. You have Clemson, which is always right there and has been great the last few years. And you have Tennessee, which would really be good this year. A lot of people have them as it's tough to say dark horse because so
Boise
many people
State.
Are picking them. Yeah, Boise State as well. But
the Orange Bowl.
Yeah. But Tennessee definitely looks like a team that can be a legit SEC contender this year. Today's U is going to be doing a bunch of Tennessee coverage of their spring game coming up. Ryan, I know you have a lot of experience covering Tennessee on the football side. Is Tennessee a legit contender this year that should be seen maybe even more as a front runner going into the season as opposed to a dark horse? Or is this a team that you think is, you know, predicted to win 8 or 9 games and could happen to tip the scale to 11 or something like that if things fall right?
Well, there's been a massive influx of talent over the course of the last 2 years, and so that certainly got a lot of people excited in Knoxville, and for good reason. It's been a while since there's been this kind of energy around the football program. After 3 consecutive 5-7 seasons, it's got people a little bit apprehensive to think a little bit too much of this team. They are still going to be very young. They're going to rely on that number 5 recruiting class to come in and kind of fill some holes for them. Of course, they played 22, 23 true freshmen last season. So they are still going to be very young as a unit. And so that kind of lends to some of the apprehension to keep people away from making too lofty a prediction. But with the amount of talent that they've accrued, specifically at the skill positions, there is reasonable optimism for some Tennessee fans in the back of their heads to have a double-digit win total in there. Now, realistically, like I said, I think more people are comfortable in that 8-win region, you know, to see them make another jump over what they did in 2014 and then maybe have them as more considerable SEC contenders in 2016. But, yeah, it's certainly possible. They've got probably the most talented skill group in the entire SEC. Ultimately, what it's going to hinge on for them to see how quickly they can improve is going to be how good are they on the offensive line, because they were bad last year. They gave up 43 sacks. They weren't particularly good on the ground. So they've got to luckily they return all 4 starters. They're going to infuse a little bit of talent on the line with a couple of four-star offensive lineman and big five-star Drew Richmond coming in. But if they don't get better on the offensive line quickly, that does kind of put a ceiling on their ability to continue to improve.
Yeah, there's a lot of people high on Tennessee for a lot of reasons, as you mentioned, those skill positions. There are still some question marks going into the year, as is always the case in spring practice. Dustin, we saw Joshua Dobbs come in for Tennessee last year, really kind of boost that offense, but there were some inconsistencies on his part, and given that he was a freshman, you know, you expect that, but do you think that Joshua Dobbs is a consistent of enough performer to lead them to an SEC title, or is he sort of this guy who's going to provide highlights but really can hurt you at the worst of times when you're trying to win an SEC title?
You know, that's a really interesting case, and I was reading something today that made an argument that Joshua Dobbs has a legitimate shot at a Heisman candidacy because he's posted, you know, these highlight numbers. He's got video game-type statistics in some of the games he's played in this season. I don't know if we've seen – I know he played the last five, six games of the season for Tennessee, but I don't know if we've seen a large enough sample size from him to know if he can be the kind of game controller that you need to be in the SEC. Now, I don't know that he's going to be a breakout quarterback, a guy that's putting up 40 touchdown passes in a season, but he doesn't need to be. But I don't know. We'll see if he's got the experience and if he learned enough last season to really control the game and just kind of be the field general that you need to be in the SEC to be successful. But he's going to have to become a little bit more consistent. I think we saw that with 9 touchdowns, and I think he had 6 or so interceptions last season. So he'll have to improve in the consistency. But he doesn't need to be a phenomenal piece for Tennessee to win next season. They've got enough pieces around. They're improving on both sides of the football. They'll be good. He'll need to be good, but doesn't need to be extraordinary.
Yeah, with a program like Tennessee, you know they're going to have the athletes to contend for SEC championships. It's just a matter of those pieces coming together. Another really perennial power on the other side of the country is USC. A lot of people are high on them this season. Today's You will be at the USC spring game. I'm really excited for it. Going back to my alma mater, a lot of people have the Trojans in their top 5 in these way too early top 25 polls. Ryan, do you think, or I guess the first question is, what do you think the top storylines are for USC in their spring practice? These question marks they need to address in order to hold in the top 5 throughout the year as opposed to fall down the rankings as they've done before.
Well, obviously a lot of people are excited about that recruiting class, but the reality is the vast majority of that talent probably isn't going to hit campus until summer session in June there because they took a lot of late commitments that weren't able to get onto campus for the January session and be here for spring ball. So I think right now a lot of folks who, you know, pay quite a bit of attention to USC, including one of our newest writers, Kyle Kensing, who covered USC last year, I think he'd get on my case if I didn't mention specifically the tight end battle. They've only got one scholarship tight end that's on campus right now. They're going to have a few more additional bodies coming this fall, but right now, you know, they've just got Bryce Dixon, and then they've got Jalen Cope Fitzpatrick with Bryce Dixon suspended, and then a walk-on in Connor Spears. So there's not a lot of depth there at tight end, and that's certainly something they're going to be keeping an eye on and hopefully continue to build a little bit of depth there until they can get the reinforcement from that recruiting class this fall.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that that they are able to perform to their ranking. When I was there and since I've been away from L.A., there's been multiple times where they have, like I said, really disappointed. Dustin, do you think that it all becomes a mental thing when teams have disappointed before and they've been ranked, USC was ranked in 2012 number one in the preseason a lot of places and barely got to a bowl game? Does it become at all mental at a program like that that has these really high expectations, or is it a new team, new season type feel?
I think it depends on who you ask. I think the players and the coaching staff would say new players, new year, but I think with the expectation being so high and having disappointed in the past, I think the fans still probably have that that thought lingering in their minds that, hey, you know, we've been to this level before. We've been predicted to win national championships or get to high bowl games or win double-digit win seasons and not reach their full potential. So I think that's more of a fan thing to kind of think, oh, here we go again, or are we actually going to live up to our potential this season? Whereas the players, I think, you know, there's not as much affiliation with the previous seasons and what you've done in the past. Certainly, if it's a team that's coming in and, you know, you're expected to win 10, 11 games and you win 3 or 4, that's probably going to linger in your mind. But I think it's more from the fan standpoint. It gives us something fun to talk about. Although, you know, if history tells us anything, it could linger with, you know, teams like Clemson, South Carolina, always having that one big loss or having a disappointing stretch towards the end of the season. So there may be some truth to it, but I think it's more of a fan thing.
Well, I can confirm all the points you made about the fans being wary as one of those. So we'll the Trojan fan base will believe it when they see it. Obviously, we hope they can stay in the top five, maybe compete and sneak into the college football playoff. That's a long way off, though. Thank you guys for kicking off our spring football primer here. We're going to be covering multiple teams over the next couple weeks on these podcasts. Hopefully reveal a few more places that Today's You will be at for those spring games. But thank you guys for joining, and thank you, Pat, as well.
Okay, hey, guys, I have a quick question as well for you. Just because you're a college football analyst and expert doesn't mean you don't fill out a bracket, right?
Of course not.
So Dustin, who do you have in the Final Four?
Oh, it depends on which bracket you look at.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about.
I've got about 12 brackets filled out right now. I've got your Wisconsin Badgers winning one just to appease you, Pat, of course. But I've got in my bracket, I've got Kentucky, I've got Virginia, I've actually got Louisville in that. I can't think of which one it is now. I'm not looking at it.
The East, yeah.
Yep. And then I've got Arizona down in that bottom bracket as my final submission.
Okay.
Nice.
Ryan, what about you?
Well, I, like Dustin, have 7 brackets filled out, so I've also got a plethora of options to choose from. I've basically got Kentucky in the Final Four in all of them except for one that I just wanted to have for outlier's sake, where I took Notre Dame in the Midwest region. But, yeah, so I've got Kentucky for sure slotted into one of those. I quite frequently have Villanova appear in the South region. I've kind of got a toss-up between Virginia and Iowa State going on, and then in the West, I'm kind of jockeying back and forth right now between Wisconsin and then Kansas.
Ah,
wow, another Wisconsin. We have a Today's You pool here for our 20-plus riders, and you can bet that the winner of that will be made public for bragging rights, so stay tuned to that.
Got a year's worth of glory coming up.
Yeah. So stay tuned for that. Thank you guys for being on the podcast today. And everybody can read their stuff multiple times a week on todaysyou.com. Dustin, as well, on Twitter is at @sharp_shooter. That's SCHUTTER. And Ryan at @Ryan_Wooden. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Colin. Thanks, Pat.